name is Nicole Jaspard. I'm an empath and paranormal investigator. I am also an author of a dozen books. Thank you for listening to Haunted Real Connections, where I'll bring you the best mediums and paranormal people the field has to offer. Stay tuned for another great show on Paranormal King Radio. Hey guys, how you doing? It's Haunted Real Connections on Paranormal King Radio, and I'm your host, Nicole Jasper. And I have not only one, but two awesome guests here with me tonight. They're both incredible filmmakers and actors, and from the CRA Entertainment. And hopefully y'all can hear me, right? Welcome back to our show. And
thank you, Nicole.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Both David and Craig are here. So they not only did one, but they did a couple more since the crumbs, right? And I really enjoyed all your films, of course. You got a fan right here.
Thank you, Nicole.
Yes, thank
you're welcome. So Craig is an award-winning filmmaker at the SAG AFTRA actor
and filmmaker, and so is David. Yeah, we both are. Mm-hmm.
And both for sure receive awards, various independent films festivals, and so you come into entertainment more later on in life, and enjoy a successful career in the, you know, in the industry, and David also was also a lawyer.
Don't hold that against me.
Hey, we need lawyers. And at Santa Clara University and UCLA PSTA department. And so since you have done screen and even television and stage credits. And so David has done quite a bit of movies. Like Dane, D-A-N-E, to Believers, and Dead Man's Walk, and I think even The Crumbs, if I may add. And
yeah,
was one of my favorites. So yeah, welcome to our show, from the CRA, and you know, I'm quite a person for all legal affairs. So I really appreciate y'all taking your time to be on our show, guys.
Thanks for having us.
So can you tell us a little bit more about yourself, if you don't mind? About what got you interested in doing this type of work?
Well, you want me to start, David?
Sure, Dave, go ahead.
Well, I was a mortgage banker, Nicole, for years and years and years, 25 years.
Oh, wow.
And I thoroughly loved it. I really thought I would retire as a banker. I started in 1983 as a loan officer. And in 2007, the lending environment was very toxic. And so going into 2008, the decision was to shut down December 31st, 2007, which thankfully we did. Friends of mine that were still in the industry in 2008, they had a really, really tough time. Uh-huh. And so I made an earlier exit for mortgage banking than I had anticipated. And one day at a gym that I go to, LA Fitness here in Orange County, a good friend of mine had been an actor for years. And one day we were talking by the water cooler, and I asked Lewis, I said, so what's new in the acting world for you, Lou? And he had just booked a role in Tarantino's film Django. Now, back in the day, and Lewis is my age, so he's now 66 or 67. I think he's a year or two younger than myself. And so when he was a young guy, he went through the same acting class as Tarantino, Gina Davis, and Brad Pitt was a young kid. And yeah, Brad Pitt was a young kid in the class, and they didn't think he was going to make it whatsoever. And, you know, he did Thelma and Louise, and the rest is history, if you will.
Right.
So we were talking, and so one thing led to another, and he invited me to his acting class. Well, what I didn't know was he was an acting coach. So I drove to Santa Monica from Lake Forest here in Orange County just to really watch actors do their thing, so I thought. And the next day, to make a long story a little bit shorter, he called me and asked me, you know, what do I think? And I said, what do I think about what? And anyhow, he persuaded me to give it 90 days. And that's how it all started. And I mean, it completely and thoroughly took me out of my comfort zone on a very, very high level, that standing up in front of people and having to memorize something and make it look natural. It was.
Right. You know, and how do you do that? I feel like I can't even remember what I put down on my shopping list. How do you remember all this lines?
I know. It's like when I go to the store, I think, okay, there are four items I need. Why can I only think of three? What was that other item? And
exactly.
You know, that's probably a better question for David. David is also an acting coach.
Right.
And yeah, so David, do you want to tackle how your technique in memorizing lines?
Well, actually, it's rather boring. I start and I teach actors this. It's a simple process. Uh-huh. You say the first line out loud five times. Then you say the second line out loud five times. Then you combine the two and you say the first and second line together out loud five times. You repeat that process through the entire script. That's it. And believe it or not, you will memorize those lines. It's a compound process of memorization. You're reading it, you're saying it, you're hearing it, you're seeing it. All those different aspects to your senses will reinforce that memory. The second thing I do, of course, I try to is relate it to the scenes in which that is taking place and what the action, what's unfolding in the scene, because that will tell you. Yeah, that'll help you understand what's going on, and through that you can understand why they say what they say. So, and that's a whole different process, but there's a lot of techniques people use for memorizing. I've memorized, you'll love this, I memorized a 90-minute script, verbatim, every comma, every period, to the point where you could stop me and start talking about the football game, and afterwards I'd pick it right back up where it was. So it's not difficult. It's just a matter of practice, and like anything else, you over time you develop the almost a second nature to it.
Right.
But
it's like
that's
learning
the
an instrument.
Thing.
Exactly,
you're doing the same thing over and over and over and over till pretty soon they say do it and you just bam.
It's like
put
you don't
it
need
out
a
there.
Photograph and remember, you just whatever comes natural.
Yep, absolutely right.
Or like fine-tuned instruments.
Music is so similar because you're seeing it, hearing it, you're touching it. I mean, you're hearing it in your head while you do it.
Right.
So, absolutely. I've used many different techniques for memorization. I've had to memorize some serious stuff in my life. So, yeah. Acting and memorization, that's the minimum aspect of it, of acting, memorizing lines. You can't memorize lines, forget about it. There was actors. There was a gentleman who played a television show called Hunter. He couldn't memorize his lines. He was always giving. He was the lead. He was always giving the lines to somebody else to say. Show failed. Yeah, it failed because of that.
Wasn't his name David Fred something? Or he was a former
Rambler. Yes.
Fred
yes. He was
Fred
a former.
Something. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, real tall guy. But yeah, he was always having his co-actors there say his lines because he couldn't do it. And they were all information lines towards plot and stuff like that and developing character. But he didn't have a memory. He didn't even try, I think. He was just lazy.
That's probably he didn't have a whole heart in it, you know?
Yeah.
Possibly. So, kind of at least my next question for both of you. Since you guys did a couple of movies, if I may give a shout out, one is Love in Quarantine, right?
Yeah,
Love in Quarantine.
I love that one, by the way. And The Demon Fighter, which I happened to see recently. And I in both films, two thumbs up. You guys, I highly recommend.
Beautiful. Thank you very much.
So those ideas, I mean, how do you come up with the cool idea? You just brainstorm or just, you know, the natural comes to you?
Well, first you have to bump your head.
Right. I should know as a writer.
That's it. Bump the head, then you have an hallucination, and you decide, hey, I think this might be a movie. So you write it down. I'm just messing with you.
Well, we start the creative process, typically, Nicole. I'll tell David, I say, really, man, I've had enough beer. And he'll say, no, Craig, one more beer. And then the creative juices start to flow. I'll say, yeah, man, I like that idea. So that's not, I'm just kidding. But I'll tell you an interesting story with Love in Quarantine. We were at the very tail end of shooting Demon Fighter.
That's an excellent film, by the way.
Oh, thank you. And we were sitting in the living room, and we had just finished shooting a scene. And David said, he goes, I have an idea for a film. And then he started telling me about Love in Quarantine. Now, this was a couple of years ago, so we're in the throes of the quarantine, of course. And I, you know, of course, it made perfectly good sense. And so as soon as we were done, you know, David did what he does. He, you know, started writing the script, and you know that's how that started. Now, where he came up with the idea, that's up to David. It came into his brain somehow.
Well, actually, it was when we were shooting Demon Fighter, we were all quasi quarantined in the same house. We had a lot of people in heat.
I thought
we had a lot of people living there. Yeah, and we were shooting the film, and I started thinking about the interactions between everybody. And, you know, how that works. And I started, it occurred to me that what if it was two people that loved each other, just loved each other, were devoted to each other. But due to quarantine, all the little pet peeves and idiosyncrasies, little things that drives you nuts, all those little things started piling up and getting bigger. And then I thought, what if it was a biracial couple? Then they could really start getting at each other's shit. Excuse my language.
Right.
That's how that came up. And it was crazy because as soon as I wrote the script, we decided to shoot it. We were shooting Demon Fighter at the end of June, first part of July. And we finished shooting it, put it in post-production, started working on that. I wrote the script for Love in Quarantine, and we started shooting that immediately right prior to Valentine's Day, the following few months, six months later. And then we had them both in post, and we put them out there. But a lot of people looked at us kind of cross-eyed, like, why are you shooting another film when you haven't produced the first one yet?
Right.
You have to strike when the iron is hot. The idea was ripe at the time. We felt comfortable with it. We had the actors. So, you know, we also think the subject matter was worthy. So we put it together and put it out there. And the actors did a heck of a job. Jeannie Young, N.J. Brown, all the people, Johnny Moore, Kenesha, Williams. They
did
killed it.
An excellent job. And speaking of your special effects team and makeup, they did everything on the spot because it looks so real, you know?
For Demon Fighter?
If I may say, yeah.
Did you see Demon Fighter?
Oh, yes, I did. Excellent film, by the way.
Thank you so much. Yeah, that was Rob
I'm
Vargas.
A horror movie fanatic. Go ahead.
Ah, there you go. Rob Vargas was our guy, and Dan Acosta. Those two guys did the makeup. They did a heck of a good job. Rob Vargas also designed and put together the interior ceremony room. Rob Vargas created that for us. Yeah, he's a really talented young man. So we were blessed to have these people with us and working on these things with us. You know, that's what this is about, Nicole.
Right.
This is about finding a team of people who can see the same vision, can work towards the same goal, even if they don't believe in it. And I'll tell you what I mean.
Right.
Shooting Love in Quarantine, with a lot of the crew and even the actors came to me and said, is this supposed to be a comedy? It doesn't seem very funny. And I said, well, just hang in there. And I go, once we put it all together, I go, you're going to see it's funny. And I go, at least I think it's going to be funny. I'm hoping it's going to be funny. And it turned out to be pretty good because you play comedy for the reality, not for the joke.
Right.
And that's what makes it funny. So they just kicked it. I was so pleased.
It's a real excellent film. Everybody just did a great job. Yeah, so I appreciate it. And I want to welcome everybody in chat who's listening. Mike, David, George, Shannon, Dave, Terry, York, and Steve. You guys, of course, were there. So they're already asking us questions from George Shannon. He wants to know what kind of research went into learning about the 90-minute film.
Well, I did that research. And what it was I do look into actual demonology. I read up on who they are, why they are, what they can do, what their status is in that realm. And I keep all that into consideration. I personally, how can I say this? I personally believe that demons are inherently part of us, that we all have them. And it's how we react in life to circumstances that come to us that allow either the demon to come forth or to keep the demon at bay. So for me, somebody asked me once before, do I believe in ghosts? And I said, well, I believe in definitely spirit energy.
Yeah.
I go, and it could be negative or positive. I said, it depends upon a lot of things. I think positive energy really invites positive energy.
That's true.
So looking at these demons, we're like, all right, we need to understand first, you can't kill a demon. Demons don't die. But how do you deal with a demon? Well, how do you
Hopefully
believe in something?
Right.
Yeah. And that could be anything. It could be booze, sex, food, power. It could be anything. That demon could manifest itself in many different ways. And I think oftentimes we are afraid to admit that we have it, that it's controlling us, that it's taking over part of us. And that's when we lose. If you can admit that, you can say, hey, man, all right, I know what's bugging me. I know why I'm sitting here and I want to eat 20 chocolate bars. I'm not going to do it. Yeah, I'm not going to do it.
Or I always say, I'm a Gemini. I have an evil twin. So
there you go. I like that. That's so true.
<You're> sorry. So anyway, speaking of film, where can everyone see your films? I know there's different platforms, right?
Sure, I'll just do them kind of in order as they came out.
Mm-hmm.
Evil Down the Street, certainly Tubi TV.
That was good.
It's on Tubi TV. And also, you know, we have the last year or so, it's on 5 different YouTube channels. And, you know, I didn't realize at the time when all this hit, we didn't realize that how many people really turn to YouTube. And you can go to YouTube and find us on Kings of Horror, MYT Horror, Movie Channel, Movie Central, I'm sorry. And you can just really Google the name of both Evil Down the Street and The Crumbs, and you'll see it pop up. Oh, thank you so much, Nicole.
You're welcome.
And so they would appear there on YouTube. And it's cool for us because YouTube worldwide. And, you know, Tubi TV is cool in the States, Canada, Mexico, New Zealand, and Australia. But if you're in the UK, it's not going to work so well. So YouTube has a nice balance there. And we're also on the Roku channel. For Love and Quarantine, we would suggest Tubi TV. It's also on Amazon Prime, but free on Tubi. And Demon Fighter is certainly on Amazon Prime. And literally any day, it will be on Tubi TV.
Oh, wow. Mm. Yeah, I look forward to seeing that again. I'm weird. I like that kind of film.
That's great.
Let me ask you, Nicole. Uh-huh. Would you be interested in interviewing John Ozuna, the actor from it?
Of course, yes. Send him my way.
You got it. I'll send John to you. And
awesome.
How about his one of his rivals there, either Jeff Hatch or Jeannie Young,
sure.
Either one of them or somebody else. We'll hook you up because he's a great, not just a awesome martial artist, but he's a great person. He's so good to talk to. He's so easy. He's a very affable person. You'd enjoy him. He's got a lot of cool stories. He's working with a lot of people. He's shooting films right now as we speak in Chinatown.
Wow.
Yeah, he's got a lot of stuff going on. He's a really, really, he's a gentleman. I can't speak any higher of this man than I could. He's a good person. You'll like working with him.
Yeah, no problem. They're all welcome.
All right. I'll hook them up.
Awesome. Thank you. I look forward to that. And I think Pete himself has a question for you. What's the difference between a movie made based on true events and one that's made on historical events?
Well, maybe I'll go ahead, David. Go ahead, please.
Well, I was just going to mess with the definitions of true versus historical.
Yeah.
Okay. Historical is a documented item, one, whereas true could be legend. Okay. It could be legend. It could be, for example, the legend of Joaquin Murrieta. I don't know if you're aware of California history, but there's a gentleman here in the 1850s just defied everybody. Awesome individual. So there's story there, and there is some history based on the story, but history is documented. That's the real difference, I think. History is documented where we actually have times, dates, people, places that we can ascertain to a reasonable certainty, as opposed to a story which has been passed down, and we say, well, this happened. And I'll say something, and I hope I don't offend anybody. The legend of Christ, I absolutely believe, but there's no documented history.
Right.
But yet it is such a incredible story that many believe without necessity for documentation. So I think that's the critical and crucial difference between the two. When it comes to making movies, anything that is historical in nature, we do verbatim. In other words, we take right out of the textbooks or anything that we research, and we use that language, that understanding.
Right.
History, and I'll give you an example, The Crumbs was based on a historical event, the Bloody Benders. The Bloody Benders. This is a family of people who were killing people. They owned a way station out in the middle of nowhere, Craig?
Yeah,
Midwest, and they were just killing people and robbing them. But it's not historically documented. It is a historical story in that people died. They never caught these people, so they were never brought to justice and proved to be true. So that's a story that has worthiness to it, but it's not documented to be historical.
And I would just add one part to the question that was asked about true events. Our film, People Down the Street, family in question, I had known for years, way before ever becoming a filmmaker. And their story always struck me. If there's one, there's more than one. And this is just an ordinary family. You can play duck goose with any of your neighbors, and you know, it would fit them. Just unfortunately, they just had, you know, kind of a unique experience in life. So with that film, David and I tried to portray their story as accurately as possible. But so in that event, you know, the family was known. But like what David said, David does a great job in researching the historical aspects of it, something that we've done inspired by true events or historical events. I'm sorry.
Okay, thank you. And I have a next question on my list for both of you. What or who were some of your major influences when you first started out?
Go ahead, Greg.
I was gonna say, I could answer that a couple of different ways. One, as an actor, but I'm gonna put that one aside. But more from filmmaking, and realizing the genre that David and I have kind of done the bulk of our films thus far, in the horror realm, paranormal realm. For me, it would be Alfred Hitchcock, just the brilliance of that man, you know. So for me, he's in the number one slot. Now, and plus being raised as a younger guy, you know, we saw the movies when they first came out. And it was just like The Birds, you know.
It still trips
me out. I'll take my dogs on a walk, and at sunset, all these black crows go flying overhead. And it's still, I can just see Tippy head was a headburn.
I think so.
Being attacked by him, so birds head still kind of trip me out.
And I like birds.
How about you, David?
You know, I was thinking about that because as a kid, growing up, I've always loved cowboy movies, and I've always wanted to be an actor since I was a little boy. But life, you know, takes you where you're going to go, and you got to get past that. But watching movies, there was always certain films that stood in my mind. They were so impressionable, like Dustin Hoffman in Little Big Man. I love that movie.
Incredible film.
It's the first time a film was ever made from the perspective of the indigenous peoples, the American Indian. Yeah, incredible film. But Craig is so on because Alfred Hitchcock is so incredible as a director, the things he did and what he was thinking about and how he approached his craft, his work. I also admire Alfred Hitchcock. But I'm a big gangster fan, so come on, how could you not like, you know, Scorsese and these guys? And The Exorcist?
Yeah.
Oh my God, The Exorcist? Yeah. I was a grown man when I saw it the first time. Scared the bejesus out of me. Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was so well done. I mean, it's that kind of film. So the influences are many. But those that stand out, I have to say, you know, like Spielberg, people don't see him as this guy. I see him as making horror movies. He makes a lot of horror movies. I mean, if you think about it, the movies he made, Jaws. I mean,
that's the very reason why I don't swim in the ocean, because of that movie.
No, I agree.
And I mean, even Close Encounters of the Third Kind. All these movies, they don't realize, I don't think the general audience really appreciates the depth of not just intellectually, but emotionally that these directors are looking at. Because what I got from that movie was a longing for home. I know a lot of people, I've said this to other people, they look at me like I'm crazy. I go, those people were searching for something that was fulfilling to them, and they found it there. Okay. Most of us search for home that way, and home being a love, if you will, it doesn't have to be a physical, and I'm not talking about that, but a spiritual love of acceptance and harmony. And right. When they got there and they were getting on, that's what you could see in their face. So for me, that movie was about like coming home. It was about a longing for home and family and love. And but that's just how I tend to bend shit.
Right. Anyway. All right, well, thank you. I have another question to me for both of you. What advice would you give for anyone aspiring actors or directors or filmmakers?
Stay in school.
Stay in dental school.
Yep, it pays.
Get that engineering degree.
Awesome.
You know, that's a good question. You know, the best advice I could give is, like you said earlier, I came in acting later in life. I was 56 or 57. And now I'm the tender age of 67. So,
I still might have hope. I'm just turned 50.
you're just a kid. You're just a kid. And so, like, for me, I'm starting as an actor. And again, when I came in, and my story could be anybody. You know, I wish I could tout a career like David and an educational background as David. Well, that's not the case. You know, I always enjoyed movies, but I never thought that's what I want to do. But I've always enjoyed movies. So to hurl me into an acting class, you could take anybody you know and throw them in there. That was me. And my goal was not to be a great actor. I just didn't want to suck. I wanted to not be like, oh my gosh, Craig's my scene partner. Well, that's screwed. That at least I wanted to be better than like the guy behind me in line, you know, that I was better than that guy. We all know he really sucked. And our acting coach, he put it on tape. So not only, you know, do you do it live, now it's archived. And you're just like, oh my God, I hope that never shows up on YouTube. But, you know, I quickly out of the gate started doing short films. I didn't go through like the New York School Academy of Motion Pictures or USC. I'm 57 years old. You know, David and I are at a point of our life. We don't have long-term goals, you know. so that, you know, that didn't make any sense. So I, not knowing really anything about it, started doing short films, taught myself. And also the Apple store was incredibly helpful. They have had a lot of really good classes there, but from editing to everything, I taught on short films gearing towards feature films. And by the grace of God, David and I were introduced to each other. So you just take our backgrounds, if you will, and you apply it to feature films. So the important thing is don't talk about, oh, I want to make a film. Just get out and start doing something. You know, film something. And I don't lie. If it sucks, it sucks. So, you know,
try again, right?
The correction. Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, that's it. You just go out and start making films.
Yeah. It's like you say earlier, like learning an instrument. So the more you practice, the better you get. I'm sorry, I'm a musician. So.
I'd like to add to something Craig was talking about doing, just doing. He's so right about that. And I'd like to add that if you're serious about making films, learn how to get organized.
Yeah.
That's the key.
Yeah.
That is the key. There is nothing else. That is the key. Get organized. You got a great script, so what? Do you know how to organize it? Do you know how to break it down? Do you understand its components?
Yes.
Can you put it into a working process? And that's where I think I've been blessed with that understanding how to organize stuff, because I didn't go to film school like Craig. I studied theater. My degree is in acting, directing theater, and theater and films are foreign countries to each other. They may have looking for the same kind of result, entertainment, but their approach is totally different.
What would be your favorite, like theater or stage work? Or is that stage?
Theater is much harder to do than film.
Right.
You don't get a takeover or, you know, can I try that again? You get one shot at it and that's it. You either got it or you don't. So the challenge in theater is great. But film is everlasting.
Right.
That's the lure. That's the lure. Yeah. It's everlasting. And for Craig and I, making films isn't a matter of how we can impress each other. It's a matter of, can we make a film that people would enjoy, that they'll be entertained by? Can we make a film that might have something worthwhile to understand inherent in it? Can we make a film that at the end of watching it, people will go, that's making me think. Because that's what we're about. Entertaining, hopefully informing, and hopefully enlightening.
I enjoy all your films, so yeah.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, no problem. Especially with Jesus kind of relates to this. He wants to know if the technology out today compared to years ago, if it's easier to make films or harder, and that still come down to the bigger budget movies, which usually that do better.
I think it's easier today to make films than it was before because of the digitization, it's easy for me to say, of the process. We're not looking for film per se, okay? We're actually, it's a digital. It's more convenient, it's more compact. You can do a lot of things. However, that's created an enormous market, which makes it now more competitive. So you cannot be average. You cannot be, and I'm not saying that Craig and I are above average or that our films are, you know, Oscar winners or anything like that. What I'm saying is you have to do the best you can do under the circumstances that you have with what you need.
Right.
And when you've done that, and you've reached that point and you say, this is it, we can't get it any better, then you've succeeded. But again, I can't stress enough the organization, and I think one of the differences between Craig and I's approach to this as opposed to a lot of new filmmakers, because we're relatively new filmmakers, organization. We know how to organize. And that's
and
really
that's
where it's
key, right?
I'm telling you, in 4 years, we made 4 films. And that's through planning, process, the strategy, and strategically aligning ourselves with our goals. I know that this sounds like a whole lot of hoorah, especially the filmmakers who are listening to me, but I tell you, you want to learn how to really make a film, learn how to create a business plan, learn how to break your film down into its components scene by scene to understand the needs, and develop a strategy towards your completion. It's the only way to do this. We come in on time and under budget or on budget because of that. And it may not be what some people think is awesome, but that's okay. It's the best that we could do with what we have.
That's true. Thank you. Terry York wants to know, what convinced you to mix kung fu action with horror?
Say that again?
I think you talked about Demon Fighter, but he wants to know what convinced you to mix kung fu action with horror.
I'm not quite understanding what he's asking.
What convinced you to miss, you know, like karate or kung fu action?
Oh, I see.
With
so
the
too.
Horror,
okay.
Yeah.
Oh, martial arts with films? Huh. Is that what you're talking about? Oh. God, you know, I'm just going to say this. The majority of martial arts films are cheesy. Because martial arts is martial arts.
Right. Right.
And they focus on that and not the story, not the plot, not the acting, not the circumstances. And that's how I started out. But it's gotten so much better. It truly has. And I think martial arts isn't the object, shouldn't be the object of any type of film. It should be an aspect of it. It should be
right.
part of what drives the right. action or the character thematically, something like that. So with us, and when we first did this film, when Craig and I first put it together, we wanted to make something that would get people's attention, but also help them through a storyline. And we came up with Demon Fighter. You know, he's not a hero. He's an anti-hero. He smokes pot. He cusses. He does things. But at the same time, he's true to his cause. He loves God, and he'll do whatever he can to prove that. So, you know, that's a very good question, and that's just a decision. I mean, gosh, look at the Predator. All kinds of fighting going on in that. Pretty cool stuff. You know, and then we have these Spider-Man and all these other films, but they don't carry a theme or plot that's worthy. That's what bothers me about it. And I know somebody's going to say, oh, he don't know what he's talking about. And that's okay, too, because here's what somebody once told me. Go make your own movie.
Hey. Nicole, if I could, I'm going to back up to the question before this, if I understood it correctly. And it was along the lines of costs of, let's say, indie films as compared to bigger budget films.
Right.
And the one thing I think that is important as filmmakers, nobody really cares what the cost of the film is. Let's say our audience, what they do care about, and what David and I try to really manage our films to, so long as it looks good, sounds good, good acting, and a good story, somebody's going to take their time and watch your film. And like what David said, we have never, and we never will, eyes on one of our films from the standpoint of saying, hey, that's good enough, let's move on. Now, somebody may say, well, I think your films suck. And I think, like to David's point, then go make your own damn film. But going into it, you know, I don't think there's ever been a filmmaker who'd go out of their way and saying, yeah, let's just make a really lousy film. You know, you do the very best you can, and there you go. But cost containment is very important. David and I really adhere to our budgets. You know, and if you go from 12 days to 13 days, that's about a $3,000 increase. So, you know, sticking with your plan, all your pre-planning, like David said, is hugely important. But I did want to come back and address her question a little bit on the cost basis. Mm-hmm.
So my question. So to both of you, what are your personal favorite from like top five?
Is that about your favorite films all time?
Yeah.
Wow. Well,
I'll say mine, and I think it because of my childhood, the importance of this. You know, when I was a kid, I think it was CBS. Once a year, it would come out. Big, is that David?
Did we lose him?
Do we lose him? Craig?
I'm here.
Oh, okay.
I'm here.
Okay.
You don't hear me?
We lost you. I thought we lost you.
I'm still here. I promise. I'm still. You can't get rid of me that quickly. Okay. But I had said, you hear me okay now, correct?
Yeah. Yes.
Wizard of Oz, and I associate that. It came out like once a year. It was a big deal. And either we'd have all the kids at my parents' house or we'd be at somebody else's house. You had the popcorn. But it was a really a big deal. So for me, I this number one is Wizard of Oz. That just brings back a lot of really good memories. Those flying monkeys still scare the hell out of me, you know. And it's just, you know, I really enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have to say, Wizard of Oz. Since I was a kid, I love that movie. But there's so many good movies, it's difficult to, you know, sit here and think about what's my top favorite five. It keeps mm-hmm. shifting around because I appreciate so many different genres. Like Heat, the movie Heat. That has nothing to do with horror, but it's a great film. Michael Mann film. Awesome film. I love that movie. The Godfather. I love that movie. Godfather 2, love the movie. Exorcist, loved it. Amityville Horror, loved it. The Haunting, I loved that movie. Original Frankenstein, loved the movie.
Star Wars.
Ooh, definitely a Star Wars fan.
Yeah, Close Encounters.
What David is talking about, see, fortunately, I'm going to say put a positive spin on this. David and I are old enough that we recall when these came out in the theater, like Star Wars, when that first came out as the Newport Beach Edwards Cinema, and that opening scene where all the dialogue is flying over in the spaceship. And it's like, whoa, you had never seen anything like that before. The Godfather, before that film came out, everybody was talking about the violence. Mm-hmm. At least myself, I'd never seen a film like that. The Exorcist, the same thing. So we had several films that thankfully came out in our lifetime that were real trendsetters, or they did a, you know, they made sequels out of them. But, you know, we were sitting there in a large theater when they downed the lights, and you know, we watched them when they first came out.
Oh wow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what happens when you get old.
I know, right?
Yeah, now I gotta watch Star Wars or Wizard of Oz. That's my all-time favorite.
Oh, I love the movie. Yeah. I love the movie. I love the song. It's just, I'll tell you a quick story. I was in this acting class. It was pretty intense. It was a master's class outside of school, and they were teaching emotional recall and sense memory and stuff like that. And the assignment was everybody sing a song. I'm just dying because these guys, there's some people in this class that, I mean, good God, they're virtuosos. They sing, just put the shame to you, right? So I'm like, oh, no, I don't want to do this. So everybody's belting out all these show tunes, doing all this stuff. And this one guy couldn't sing worth crap. He gets up there and he takes a chair and he puts it out in the middle of everybody, right? And he says, well, this is the song that my mom used to sing to me before she passed away. And right before she passed away, she sang to me. And he starts off with, somewhere over the rainbow. And everybody started crying. Oh, my God. He had the whole class in tears. The instructor, Jerry Gardino, he was Don Voight's acting coach. He goes up to this guy and he rubs his head and kisses him and says, I love you, man. I love you. He was the only one that did the exercise correctly. Everybody else was trying to impress people. This guy was singing truthfully, couldn't sing worth shit, but he was singing truthfully, and it just brought everybody to the floor. Right. And I never forgot that. But that's, you know, that's the kind of song that is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. Mike Davis wants to know, in terms of film writing, do you guys think you try to keep your films, like, clean and organized compared to more extreme violence? I don't know if I read that right. Let me read that again. In terms of film writing, do they try to keep their films compared to more extreme violence?
Yes. We do that on purpose. Craig and I both are not into blood and guts for the sake of watching blood and guts.
No.
That to me is not entertaining. That to me defaces the human body and spirit. Don't get me wrong. Where blood works, I have no problem with it. where killing works, I have no problem with it. But for the sake of doing it, like a chop film that just butchering people, I don't find that entertaining. That's not me. We will never do that.
No. No, I when I was a kid, I could not even watch Animal Kingdom. But when they say there's a baby impala separated from its mother as the lion, I can't watch violence like that. So that's just not.
I don't blame you.
Yeah.
But controlling violence on the set is a big issue with us. Whether we have handguns, knives, or they're fighting, or anything of that nature. I am extremely strict about those things, as is Craig. I'll give you an example. We used a gun on the Crumbs, and even though I knew the gun was unloaded inside of a case, I had the gun master check it. He signed off saying it was unloaded. He gave it to me. I checked it again and then signed off again. And it's so important, the safety aspect of it. You never know. And when fighting, I physical contact. I try to work with the actors so that they don't hurt each other, so that they understand how to do it without hurting each other. I'll demonstrate it, what to do and why. And don't get me wrong, inevitably something's going to happen. In the Crumbs, there's a scene where this mountain biker is accosting young Victoria. And our guy Lenny comes in, grabs him, throws him against the wall. Well, we rehearsed that several times. I even had them throw me against the wall. I showed them how to hit the wall, how to fall back, how to land, all that. Out the window. When it came to shoot the scene, oh, my God. Anton grabs this guy and throws him across the room, and he bounces off the wall. Bam. He hit so hard and landed on the ground. And they're shooting the film that they started to stop. I'm like, why are you stopping? I didn't call cut. He ain't dead. He's still moving around. Look at him. There's life.
Cut usually means stop.
Yeah, but it happens. I mean, that kind of stuff happens. And you just got to be strong with it. You got to deal with it. I've had a door slam on my foot in a scene. Yeah, a car door. Right around my ankle, and they're looking at me. I'm just like, just keep shooting. I'm fine. Unless you see me holler out and die and turn over, just keep going. That's the weird thing about what we do. But we're trying to.
It had to happen to me. Only it happened. The door slammed on my hand. True story.
Ouch. Ouch.
Yeah.
So, which kind of leads to my next question. Do you find it challenging to take on new character or film projects? For both of you.
say that one more time.
Do you find it challenging when you take on new character or new film projects? If so, how is it challenging?
Well, each project is different in itself.
Right.
They have different demands, different needs, different locations, different actors, different times, daytime, nighttime. I mean, there's some interiors, exteriors, there's so many different things. So, each project, we approach each project as an individual thing. And nothing is the same. Nothing is the same. We don't expect that. We prepare each project as an individual thing. That's what we really like. I'd just be sick to my stomach if I was doing the same thing over and over.
But our approach, how we do our business, is the same. The project changes, but the way that we go about it is not like, oh, gee, man, how are we going to do this one? That here is the project. You set that aside, but the structure, we do pre-production, production, post-production. And then let's say after post-production, distribution, that part for us is kind of like assembly line. You'll have some subtleties, some things that go on along the way, but our structure, how we go about filmmaking, that remains constant.
Well, the hour is flying by.
It sure is.
We had a good time.
Oh, thank you. And so do you guys ever get nervous before audition or making the film projects?
Do you get nervous?
I tend to get nervous before I anything. I don't know why, but once the lights on, move up to it.
I only get nervous when I'm the only one on set. And then you have to go on. Yeah, I'm good. No, I really don't. I feel excited. I feel happy. I feel energized.
And I would answer it two different ways. As an actor, to this day, no, I haven't had an audition in a long period of time. Anything that David and I do now, enough people know us. If they want us, they know what we do. But, I mean, we're deeply entrenched in our own projects, of course. But early on as an actor, auditioning sucked. You go into a small room, these people, expressionless, just stare at you. And you have to dazzle them. And bear in mind, I had been a mortgage banker for 25 years. Auditioning for me is like interviewing for a job. I had the same job for years. So the whole auditioning thing was, but you have to master it. You have to get it down. I mean, there's no way otherwise. But shooting a film for me, I have one goal: to get through day one. Then after that, I have one goal. I'm looking forward to the last day. That's a wrap. So once the parade begins, I have one goal: just please God, just comfortably to the last day, no major twists and giggles. Let everything go well, and then yeah. So I look forward to the last day.
Oh, thank you. He has something. He wants to know what was your most challenging scenes that you've done?
For me,
go ahead.
Yeah, in The Crumbs, it was a scene we did in the lab where we cut this girl's throat and we were supposed to have blood spurting.
That didn't
really happen. In The Evil Down the Street, it was the last scene. I won't discuss it. We'll just leave it at that.
Don't have to see it.
The other film, Demon Fighter, we had a scene 89. That just
don't.
Oh my God! It just drove crazy. Craig and I, we finally got through it. But there's always something. There's always a challenge. There's some things that go really, really well. Just you're like, wow, okay. You feel like, well, that was easy. And then there's days when it's like, well, will this ever stop? Why am I here? You know, you're looking forward to lunch. I mean, stuff like that. But for the most part, not so. The actors bring so much energy and the crew and everybody. I'm on. It's hard for me to chill out. Even after the shoot, I'll go home. It takes me a bit to unwind and to be able to go to sleep.
Go ahead.
One thing when David was talking about Demon Fighter, the scene in the parking lot of the fighters. Now, the mortgage banker side of me, everything is always a risk. I mean, that's all lending is the risk analysis for your borrower. So these guys are being flipped asphalt. So when you see the scene, I mean, you don't see them like fall out of frame. You see them falling on asphalt. So, granted they have rehearsed it, but I'm just thinking, oh, please, I don't hear anybody like, there's like this crack or a thud. They can't get up. So I was really glad when that scene was done. We both were, because that was not a joke. I mean, those guys were being flipped and falling on asphalt. So
they all did an excellent job.
They really did.
I'm going to have to buy it now.
David coached them. They spent a lot of time. You just don't show up and say, "All right, so I think why don't we just flip you?" I know that they had it down.
Well, they can flip me easy.
I'll let him know if you'd like me to.
Sure, I wouldn't want your stunt work.
There you go.
I want to feel that asphalt burn into my skin.
Well, thank you guys so much for about the hour just flying by quickly. We're like a little bit over time, but I do appreciate you guys coming back to our show, and you guys are also welcome back, of course. I'm sure you'll do more film and great work and keep up, you know, the great work and everything. And send those guys over. Yeah, we'd love to talk to
you. Thank you. We sure will. And thank you for having us. We so appreciate it.
Yes, everybody thank says you
thank
so
you.
Much.
Great show. And yeah, you guys take care and stay safe out there.
Real you quickly, thank you to your audience. Thank you to your audience. We love you guys. Thank you so much.
Yeah, right where can everyone find you, by the way, before we go?
They can find us all over the place on what? go ahead, Greg. Where can they find us?
Yeah, well, certainly Facebook. I mean, you know, we're easy to find on Facebook. Probably Facebook is the best mechanism, and it's CRA Entertainment on Facebook. And then David and me, it's just our, you know, first name, last name, nothing too fancy.
Right.
You can even Google the films, they'll come up.
Right.
You can, in Facebook, you can put in any of the films, they'll come up, our names, it'll come up. So we're easy to find, we're not hiding. Watch the movies! And we'll appreciate you. Thank you so much.
Amen.
Thank you, guys. You have a great night.
You too. Thank you so much, Nicole.
Take care.
Bye, guys.
Bye-bye.
Peace.
Hi, my name is Nicole Jaspard. I'm an empath and paranormal investigator. I am also an author of a dozen books. Thank you for listening to Haunted Real Connections, where I'll bring you the best mediums and paranormal people the field has to offer. Stay tuned for another great show on Paranormal King Radio.